Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapien Show 136. Today we're going to talk about San Diego Comic-Con and continue our discussion of Star Trek. So it's the Star Trek Part 2 episode that Sean was not privy to when Matt and I last did one. I'm Chris, and Matt is with us today, and so is Dr. Sean. He has just returned from San Diego Comic-Con, and so I'm going to kind of turn it over to him to tell us about Comic-Con. And I might ask some leading questions, but never having been, I can't really contribute much. So, Sean?
It was awesome. So what I was saying to these guys earlier was, you talk about crowds. I can't even define how crowded this place is. They cap it at 150,000 people, and they go through a lottery system, and like over a million people try to get tickets. So I've tried for the last 5 years, and finally my daughter and I got tickets this year to go. And we fortunately got tickets for all the days, which was kind of cool. And it has kind of evolved over the years from, you know, obviously a comic book type convention to more of a media type convention. So I was able to see a couple of really cool things. I kind of split my time between some of the new stuff being released and then some of the celebrations of some old stuff. So for instance, I went to a panel on the 40th anniversary of the Star Trek motion picture, which was very good. A panel on the original V miniseries, which was very good. And then I went to a panel discussion on the Orville and I got to see the new Batwoman pilot. Sorry, I saw the whole pilot. I got to see a panel on that. So that was kind of cool. I'm not real into the collectible area. I did, you know, kind of walk around and look at the stuff. Comic-Con has tried to allow the common person to get stuff. Memorabilia and stuff, because it got to the point where a lot of these brokers would go in there and try to buy up all the stuff and sell it and stuff. So they went to a raffle ticket system. So you either wait in line and pull a raffle ticket, or you get early on, you can put your name into a raffle. And yeah, so I was fortunate to get a session with the crew of the Orville. Autograph session with them, which was kind of cool. Overall, I guess my word of the day is diversity. Every studio, every show now is pushing the diversity button. If you look at Marvel as just an example of their new shows, most of their shows are going to historically in sci-fi have been underrepresented populations. Star Trek the same way. You look at the new shows and their cast, for instance. Went to a couple sessions where they're talking about, well, how do we get women more interested? Women historically are not going to pick up comic books, right? For the token Wonder Woman or the token Batgirl or something like that. And so they've been saying, okay, how do we do this in the frame of media? How do we do this in movies and shows and so on? Batwoman, or I think it's Batwoman, Batgirl, Batwoman, I can't remember the name. Anyways, on the CW, will be the first lesbian superhero, out lesbian superhero. And in the pilot, I'm not allowed to disclose, but you'll see that they push that very hard, that you know she's a lesbian in that.
But here's a question I got to interrupt here, because Matt and I actually had a discussion about this. Because, Star Trek Discovery, we have two LGBTQ characters. We have, well, we actually have three, because you have Stamets and Dr. Culber.
Jet Reno.
And then you have Jet Reno.
My girlfriend.
Yeah.
My girlfriend or boyfriend, however you want to say.
But the thing is how necessary. I mean, I have no problem with the characters being gay or homosexual or whatever you want to call it. In the case of Culber and Stamets, it is part of the story because you have to understand that they love each other and there's this bond, and that was motivation for driving significant portions and storylines within Discovery, both season one and season two. But like the Jet Reno thing, did it really matter that we knew that she was gay? Yeah, you know, she brings it up in a conversation and it's just kind of thrown in there. And I think we're going too far. You know, every new show has to have a gay character. Every new show has to have this, has to have that. But does it really push the storyline? You know, is it integral to the storyline? I think that's what you have to ask yourself. Is it integral to the storyline? And, you know, and as an agenda, what is it really pushing? Is it pushing something that is part of the story, or is it pushing something that is just being pushed because it's an agenda?
Well, for me, it comes down to
what I
want to see is characters that are believable and representative of. I mean, there's no such thing as a Starfleet crew in our current, you know, in our current life.
Yeah.
But we have a United States Navy. I want a crew that looks like the Navy. Or some
that's the show Richards.
Well, yeah, exactly. But my point is that you don't have to have a character who is gay for the sake of being gay. If it contributes something to the story, great.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just to check off a box, that to me is pointless.
In a lot of shows, to me, that's all they're doing. I don't care what their sexuality is. We're making the statement just so that we can make the statement to check a box.
Yeah.
See, I take it a little bit differently. I don't mind gay, straight, you know, whatever. What I'm getting kind of tired of is this rebooting of systems to throw in a female, like female Thor now in Marvel,
yeah,
or female 007 now. Why couldn't you make her 008?
Yeah.
The 007 thing, I actually am
that
less,
bothers the piss out of me, by the way.
What will make me angry is if they color Gemma Bond. That will irritate me.
Well, yeah,
but just
007
because
was
the number is just a designation. Yeah. But if they call her Gemma Bond or something.
But that being said, if
the
it's
designation James, that drives the series. Then.
Well, yeah. I'll get you that. But if he retires, which has never happened before.
But wouldn't they retire his number like we win the NFL?
No, this is James Bond.
They might retire
his uniform number.
They wouldn't because they've set precedent. You know, Q has changed several times and.
Well, okay, if we have a new Star Trek with NCC 1701 called the Blister, you'd be pissed off.
Yeah, I would. Okay. I was ticked off when they keep blowing
Star
up.
Trek Blister.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's what I'm having a problem with, and that you see that a lot. Like, for instance, the Batwoman CW pilot, when you watch it, is very well done, and they do this. I don't want to say tastefully because I don't want to go down that road. That's not my point. My point is it's believable. It's story driven, and it's not reincarnating somebody in a different form. Mm-hmm. It's actually driving a new character, which I like.
I'm okay with that. This goes back to the whole Battlestar Galactica thing, in where you have Starbuck. Who's now a chick for the sake of just having her be.
But she smoked cigars, so I was okay with it.
Well, okay.
So she was a Janet Reno. Or Jet Reno.
Jet Reno. No, Janet Reno, yeah.
Janet Reno dance party. Yeah.
But no, Matt, that's exactly. You just hit the nail on the head, my point. Call her something else. If you're going to reboot a series or something like that, it's okay to change a character and add something to the depth, but don't. Make it the same as a previous character, just reincarnated. That's just it doesn't come across believable to your old fans,
which is
and you're not going to gain any new fans.
Which is why I actually like the Orville. It's an homage show. It's clearly an homage show, but it doesn't have to be Star Trek.
Correct.
Yeah. Even though I call it Star Trek Orville, but
yeah,
that's not what it.
I mean,
it has to be.
And I think that's why Discovery, it plays well, too,
because it's new characters. It's not, you know, we're not fundamentally rewriting, you know, Spock and Kirk's relationship or Correct. Spock and Bones relationship
Correct.
And things like that. Now, going back to Battlestar Galactica, the same thing, you know, they changed Boomer into a woman, but I liked how they played that, you know, with the whole Boomer and Athena.
But they could have called her something else. My point
yeah,
is
they could
they can change, you can, what's that movie, Point Break? One of my favorite movies is Point Break. They redid it and they totally hacked it up, but they called it Point Break. Can't you make an action movie like that and not call it Point Break? Yeah, the answer is yes. Then do that. You're not gaining anybody. Nobody's saying, oh my gosh, this is great. It's another Point Break. Let me go see it again. Red Dawn.
Yeah.
First one, excellent. Second one, call it something else because it's not Red Dawn. You know, that's what bothers me. And Marvel is going down that freaking path.
Well, they are,
but they did that with the comic books too. To me,
comic books, they rebooted. They're trying to gain.
Reason they're making these changes is for a checkbox mostly, mm-hmm. not because it's good for the story or good for the storyline, or even has now. Even though there is a female Thor in the comic books, I think they handled it better than they're going to do in the movies because the female Thor in the comic books is actually Thor's daughter.
Daughter.
And so he's passing the torch down.
This Jane Foster thing is gonna. There's no plausible reason for her to take on the mantle.
No, they were going, well, who do we have in the Marvel comic universe that we can do this with?
Throw in the fact that now you're having to deal with Natalie Portman, who. I don't understand why she was cast in the first place. She hates genre movies. We learned this with the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
She hates this stuff. So why is she auditioning for the first part? Why is she being cast?
Well, see, and I like, so I went to the V Memorial one or whatever, and he brought up a great point. I forget names, but he brought up the original writer, director. If you look at their cast, was very diverse, and this is in the 80s.
Yeah.
Very diverse cast.
Yeah.
And he didn't force it.
No.
It wasn't forced. You had basically everybody represented. You know, so you don't have to reboot that and throw garbage into that.
TOS, same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were lauded for, particularly at the time, they have a diverse cast in TOS by today's standards, frankly. You know, and they tackled some things that, you know, big social issues that are still plaguing us today. Like the Charon episode, you know, it's where you had the one guy who was white and black and the other guy who was black and white. Yeah. You know,
I hated the guy that was black and white.
Yeah.
The white and black guy was the guy I liked.
How many stars did he have on his belly?
Yeah, exactly. What the crap. But no, in like V, that story plays today. If they did the exact same story and didn't change anything, it's still today.
Yeah.
You know, those are the classics and stuff.
Well, and
to me, going back to your Point Break thing, mm-hmm. You can retell V and call it something else.
Call it something else.
The problem I have with the retelling of V,
that's my point.
Or even the rebooting of V, even if they kept it all the same.
Well, because they call that Independence Day.
Exactly.
Is because,
and they brought that up in the panel, too.
Yeah.
Because V was good, particularly in the 80s. And everybody forgets, it actually had a pretty all-star cast.
It did.
Mark Singer, Robert Englund was in that show. Mm-hmm.
Well, be careful. It was an all-star cast after V. Robert Englund wasn't famous until after V.
True. But I mean,
and Mark Singer was the Beastmaster guy.
Exactly.
And in fact, that's what he said. He goes, "I want the Beastmaster guy." He didn't even know his name.
but they rebooted V in the early 2000s, and Miranda Baccarin from Firefly was the commander. You know, and they kept her a woman, and then. The you know they had a different cast of people who were the main characters who were the resistance on Earth. And they were not named the same names that all the people in the original V, and it turned out great.
The other part of that,
because you also had Jamie Bamber was in that reboot as
correct
from Battlestar.
But the other part of that was, and it's been a while since I've watched the original, but it was like LA based, whereas the reboot was like New York based, which I get that too, because that's telling the story from a whole different city with a whole different cast of characters.
I
get that.
My wife loved V. And so anytime she can find it on any of the streaming things. So she was rewatching the reboot because mm-hmm. you can't get the original one. You can't even buy it on DVD or anything.
DVD. Ah. Yeah. We'll talk.
Yeah. So I think it was LA-based too. It might have been Seattle-based. Because the main character who was...
No, the original was LA because it was near the border.
No, I mean the reboot.
Oh, reboot. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It wasn't LA based, wasn't which is LA. My point.
Yeah,
you can continue the universe, if you will, by telling the same story essentially in a different locale with different characters who treat the invasion differently than before.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's still interesting. It's still fresh. You can add your gay character if you want. You can make the lead character a woman. You can do whatever you want to do. I mean, there's no reason to.
Yeah. Well, it's essentially we would all be pissed, and I think actually most fans would have been pissed if the Kelvin timeline, Jim Kirk was Jane Kirk.
I'd have riot.
I mean,
there are some characters you do not.
I mean,
mess
look,
with.
Look how mad
James
you are.
Bond, I'm telling you.
How mad you are about Khan Noonien and Singh.
Well, precisely. He's the
how
quintessential
you have
villain.
A non-dark complected. You have a British.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get any further away from
the name Khan Noonien and Singh.
Yeah.
Then. Stick up his butt Brit.
Now, they tried to fix it, and that's what I really think this is so, because the Kelvin timeline, Star Trek is so, the thing we've learned is J.J. Abrams had never watched Star Trek in his life. I think he might have watched one or two episodes of like the first season or second season of Next Gen.
Well, and he clearly watched Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but continuity is not a big deal. He's not for him. The details about making a universe have continuity and logical thinking, like I mean, how many people go from the United States Naval Academy as a cadet to becoming the captain of of an aircraft carrier or a battleship or a destroyer, you know,
or a dinghy.
Yeah,
I mean, it does not happen.
It doesn't happen. And that's just one of the things that you can, you know, if the sci-fi is good enough, that's one thing you can kind of ignore. Problem is the sci-fi wasn't good enough because it didn't make sense. There was no logical reason why, you know, all of this was happening.
Now, granted, this is James T. Kirk, so I mean. This is the guy that cheats death and cheats every test and is the quintessential male for an entire generation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not put that aside. So if there is going to be a character who's going to go from cadet to captain of the Federation flagship in a 2-hour movie, James T. Kirk is your guy. But man, it has to be plausible, and I just really didn't feel like we got that.
You know, and that's the same thing with about Cumberbatch being Khan.
Right, exactly.
You know, Paramount tried to go back and fix that in some of the tie-in comic books and stuff like that. But the problem is the mainstream folks that they were trying to bring into Trek, the reason they were trying to get JJ in it,
none of them are going to read the comic books.
But part two of that is, what box does he check off? He wasn't gay. He was an old white dude. I mean, he played Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I guess that...
Well, there's so many problems with that movie, though. I mean, there, you know, the gratuitous scenes with Carol Marcus and the shuttlecraft where she's changing her uniform, things like that. I mean, yeah, is it entertaining? Hell yeah. But was it... Did it drive the plot or have any sense? No. It was put in there just because it... Same reason why Jet Reno was mentioned that she was married to a woman in Discovery. Because we were checking a box because we're trying to appeal to some demographic.
That particular scene, I think the demographic was 12 to 18 male. You know?
Yeah.
Quite frankly,
you could have eliminated her character from the movie, and the movie would have been the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know. I love.
But the thing that I think came out about the same time as Comic-Con was going on was this idea of Paramount and CBS reunifying. And part of why that's such big news is we can finally put this JJ verse back in the box and forget
well,
it ever happened.
I think Paramount wants to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a couple of reasons why we're seeing the Viacom CBS reunification, and part of it is CBS All Access. As much as I hated to see another, you know, streaming service, particularly by a single publisher of property, but they've done a good job. At least so far, I feel that they've done a good job.
They've produced some excellent content. Now, yeah. do I like the delivery? Not particularly.
I think that going forward, that is going to be our delivery options. And frankly, I find it much more palatable because I can always say, look, I'm going to wait till, you know, whatever show on CBS ends its season and I'm going to get a subscription for a month to pay $6.99 and watch what I want and then cancel it until the next season's over.
But now if they're smart, what they're going to wind up doing is they're not going to do what they're doing now, which is, you know, slowly deal it out like it's like they're on broadcast television. They're going to ultimately have to release the whole season so that you can tell that whole story and you can watch it all in one batch.
So I like that and I don't like it. So I was telling you guys earlier about The Boys, which is the new Amazon superhero series. And by far, I've liked it the best because it's not a Marvel comic or DC comic universe superhero series in the sense that, you know, the heroes are heroes and the bad guys are bad guys. It's a lot more gray, which makes for better entertainment. And they've done a good...
If you say so.
Well, they've done a good job of adding humor to it, too.
Okay.
Plus, Carl Urban stars in it, and he, by far, after D. Kelly, he's been the best McCoy ever. As a matter of fact, he's in some respects, he's better than the real McCoy.
Don't you blaspheme.
But you know, it's a good. I've only watched the first episode and part of the second, but the storylines are good. It's a good balance of humor, action, drama. They're tackling some relevant issues, which, as a science fiction person, that's part of the reason Star Trek was always so good, and even Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, was so good, was because they were. Even though they told it through another means, they were tackling issues that, you know, we were needed to see addressed, mm-hmm. And they're doing that through this show, but it's been really enjoyable. That being said, they released the whole thing, and I'm going to be pissed when it ends, because you're going to wait 12 months to see the next 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. And that's been my complaint with like Man with a High Castle, which is a phenomenal show. is that it seems like it takes forever. I think it takes, even though CBS All Access dribbles out Discovery over at an 8-week period or whatever it is, 10-week period.
I'm not even saying they have to do like the whole season, but to just dose it out like one episode, what is that, every like 2 weeks?
No, every
week. Every week?
Every week. It's like regular. They're doing it like normal broadcast. I think you need a balance of that. I think you need some people who deliver the content like Netflix and Amazon where here's the whole season, and then you need others who deliver it week by week. Because I think both models are relevant and valid. And if you want to see the whole season in one go, you just wait until the season ends and watch it. Because that's certainly one of the things about you know, that DVR's changed was that, oh, now I don't have to watch TV when it's broadcast. And streaming services have taken that to the next thing. And, I mean...
But my point is that CBS All Access is not broadcast television. And I don't think it should be run like it is.
It doesn't bother me. I like I said, I think, you know, I'm pissed when a full season of Discovery ends or the Twilight Zone ends. And that's been dribbled out to me over 10 weeks, but I enjoy it when it's there because I know that there's a new episode next week. You know, something new to watch, and I haven't watched it yet. The other thing that happens to me, even though I do binge watch shows, like I watched the first season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Actually, I haven't finished the last episode of the first season. And I've almost made my way back through the first season of Chuck again. You know, I've watched 9 or 10 episodes of each of the shows, and I'm like, I need to switch shows.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. First of all, these aren't... How many shows did we get of Discovery in both seasons? I mean, maybe a dozen each season?
I think it was 13 each, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so American television, we're used to 22, 24, maybe 26 episodes.
You say that? So here's the interesting thing. So when we go back to... You go back every decade... The television studios have made us comfortable with shorter and shorter and shorter seasons. You look at some of the early shows like Andy Griffith and things like that, and they might have taken 1 week or 1 month of the year off in filming because you'll have 56 or 86 episodes in a year.
Well, there's a difference between a half-hour comedy and a one-hour drama.
It's not the way they program them. But today we have these things that go on because you have, and it used to be summer programming was either reruns or syndicated television. There was no new content except unless it was news or sports. And now we have this, you know, this staggered lineup. So there's summer television, and there's been some good shows that have come out of that. I actually like the.
I'm not saying we need to go back to the golden age of television. What I'm saying is that. Because we've gotten to the point where we have recognized that it's to get a better quality story, we don't have to do 26 episodes. We can tell a good story in 12 or 18. We now can chunk these things up in different ways so that we can serve these things up. The short treks are a perfect example.
Yeah.
I can take a one-off, give me a one-off in a week. If it's episodic television, give that to me one episode a week. But if you're expecting me to remember what happened last week, I have a harder and harder time doing that because now I'm watching 15 different shows in a week and it's harder to... It's so much harder to the stories are now more complex. The characters are now deeper than they ever were. And I'm supposed to pick up on subtleties because there's now a twist. And if you miss it, then it no longer makes sense. What I'm getting at is if you're gonna do a show like that, you have to recognize that your audience is going to want to consume it together and not necessarily dosed out the way it's being distributed.
Well, and I think Discovery is a good example of this. You know, Star Trek, and I'm going to use Star Trek as an example because there's lots of shows that have followed this. And it doesn't matter if it's Discovery, it's been, this started in the TNG with TNG in the TNG area, because TOS, every episode of Star Trek was essentially, unless there was a two-parter, essentially was its own standalone show.
Yeah.
Just in that universe. And there are not many shows that do that anymore. Because the Orville follows the TNG standard too, which is every season or season and a half, I have a storyline arc, and that's the long arc. And then every episode or a couple of episodes, I might have another shorter arc. And then every episode, I have a couple subplots, you know, and that's the Lower Decks characters, or the even if it's a main character involved, it'll be them and a Lower Decks, somebody, you know, you're only going to see for an episode or two, who will be doing these short arcs. And that you're right, because now you have multiple storylines going on. But what does it do? It in turn makes a much more rich environment and universe for, you know, you to suspend your...
Which is why I think it's the way you watch it now is different too. Mm-hmm. You know, back when we were watching TOS, because we weren't expected to remember from, well, I mean, when we started watching it, we could watch it however we wanted to watch it, but when it was on initially, you weren't expected to, the audience was not expected to remember from week to week
some minute detail that happened
in a flash.
Yeah, the detail was, okay, this is the Enterprise, these are the characters, yeah.
We've gone way beyond that now, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's not a bad thing. It's a very good thing. I think the quality of our storytelling has been enriched, but I think the way we consume it now is different too.
Yeah. So I think the last show, big show, well done show, that did the almost TOS type of
the Twilight Zone thing's kind of like that too.
Twilight Zone is, but that's just because it's episodic in nature,
right?
And it's a story and it's a different story. Was Firefly, though, you can take almost there, I mean, there's a couple that were two-parters, but you can take almost every episode of Firefly and watch them independently, and yes, there is a grand story arc that's going across that they kind of bring together in the Serenity movie, but you don't need to know the grand story arc for, I mean, and Discovery has done a good job of, and I won't say it's homage to TOS, but they've done a good job of breaking the season up a lot of times with, there'll be this like weird episode in the middle, that yes, it's part of the story arc, but you could watch it by itself and not know any of the other story arc. Like in the first season, the episode where Harry Mudd comes back in and is got the time travel machine and is torturing Lorca and blowing the ship up over and over and over again.
The show that made the whole arc thing become the standard, at least in sci-fi, was Babylon 5. And while there were some standalone shows there,
yeah,
every episode contributed something to that.
To the major arc, story arc. Yeah.
And that's another show that I never watched when it aired.
See, I watched it when it aired.
I couldn't possibly be able to follow that show and be able to make total sense of it if I didn't watch it in a batch. And yeah, like you said, I'm going to get about, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6, 7, or 8 episodes in, and I'm going to have to take a break. But you take your break and you can come back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is when I do it is I will take the break and I might not come back to it for a month or 6 weeks. For Star Trek,
I will watch every episode, whether it comes out in one batch or once a week.
Don't get me wrong. I mean,
To go back to your Short Treks thing, Short Treks is going to be interesting this year because, one, three of the Short Treks are about Pike and his crew. So Pike, Number One, and Spock. And yes, it does relate to, because the whole idea of the Short Treks is that the Short Treks were going to relate to, initially to Discovery, but I'm assuming that they're all going to relate to the current shows as they start rolling out Lower Decks and the Georgiou show and possibly the Pike show, which has been rumored. And they added two more episodes to the Short Treks. Last year it was four Short Treks. This year it's six, and they plan on doing the same deal, so it's going to run 6 months.
So my concern with the three Pike shorts is, are they going to be three standalone episodes? Or are they going to be related? And
so it my understanding, based on the trailer that they put out for them, is that at least two of the Pike shorts are separate standalone things, because one is going to involve Spock and Number One, and one is going to involve Pike by himself. They didn't, and that was kind of interesting. So the trailer is really about those two episodes, and there's almost no hint of what the other ones are going to be, other than they announced the names of all six of the Short Treks, and they're going to be released once a month, just like the Short Treks last year.
Looks horrible.
Here's the question I have about that is, if they're released once a month, say Discovery started in January of last year, we should have got the first one in June.
Well, again, this is where I come back and say, if you're going to do something consistent, then you have to be consistent. I mean, you're building up expectation in an audience, and if you can't do that on this platform for whatever reason, then you need to reevaluate what you're doing. Yeah. So, I'm not going to shell out $6.95 a month or whatever it is and not get what I am expecting.
Yeah. No, I agree. One last thing on the whole streaming thing. So my biggest complaint about streaming is actually not CBS All Access. At least CBS All Access will tease you along, let you know the hint. They talk about relative timelines and when they're going to release the new shows and the new seasons and all this. But Netflix and Amazon are horrible about that. They'll put out a season of a show and it'll be wildly popular, and then 22 months later they put out the next freaking season.
But that's
and
only
by that point I'm like, oh, they came out with another season of that show, I might go back and watch it again.
But that's only because a lot of those shows they saved from network television. So like Designated Survivor, which
yeah.
got axed again.
Yeah.
Which really infuriates me because I really liked that show, and I liked it even better on Netflix.
On Netflix, yes.
When it was on broadcast, it was like,
well,
it got tedious.
Well, because broadcast standards, the show was a little bit neutered.
Right. But my point is that they don't know it's going to work on Netflix. They took a gamble on it. And then you have to realize, I'm sure Kiefer Sutherland by himself costs a fortune.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to then find a way to continue the show without the main character, or, which is for this show, what West Wing was supposed to be was not Jed Bartlett.
Yeah.
He was not even supposed to be a main character. Wasn't supposed to be... a recurring character at best. Would that work here? I think it would. But then it's...
Well, I'll give you an example. A show I watched, The Colony. Loved that mm-hmm. show.
Oh, I love The Colony too.
But so I watched it and I binge watched it, got done. It wasn't even renewed yet. And so I had to wait 2 months to even hear if it was going to be renewed or not.
Oh, I know.
And now you got to wait whatever, you know, Discovery hasn't even started filming, you know, for the next season and so on.
Well,
what drives me nuts is when they don't tell you if there's a guaranteed another season or not, and you get the bid.
Well, there is a good website called Is My Show Canceled? And it's a good website for, I don't know where they get their information. I know they scour some of it from the internet. And they have forums on every show. So like even, but they do put out the announcements that this show is canceled. And a lot of times they will have a definitive answer long before mainstream media will. And so I use it to look and see if my show's renewed. But also they have a new shows thing. And they know about when new shows coming. I'm assuming they're an industry group who works closely with
The Orville thing moving to
Hulu, yeah,
was a huge surprise. The last I'd heard, it got renewed on Fox.
It did.
How? Why?
So, according to Seth MacFarlane, he actually made a statement about it. Since he's not only the director, actor, and executive producer of the show. He said Fox has him working on two other projects, and it was going to do the amount of work that it takes to do Orville was going to be prohibited of this project. So the reason they moved it to Hulu is because it's going to be 22 months before we see the show, the next season.
So if I'm an actor on this show, I'm pissed off at Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
Because one, he accepted a role, a pivotal role, on a show, and then has other commitments.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just not smart.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have heard that one of the things that would help that situation is kind of kick and Mercer promote him so that he's not on the ship all the time.
He's a recurring character.
And he becomes a recurring character rather than a main character.
Yeah.
But he's kind of integral to what's going on.
Yeah. Particularly at the moment.
Yeah, and I'd have a hard time. I'm not saying the show couldn't survive without him.
It'd be a hard time.
But I'd have a harder time accepting it.
Well, that's why then you don't do the next season as the Orville. You do the next season as, you know, the Wilbur.
Recast and go. Yeah. This is what I keep saying. You know, yeah. Be creative with your solutions to problems like that.
Yeah. Because they could even re-go over some of the existing storylines, but go over it from another
perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's move on to Picard.
And yes.
So based on everything that CBS had put out about Picard, I was very wary of this show. I thought it was going to be some pedantic, you know, diplomacy. We're instead of Ta Leone as the Secretary of State, Picard is now the Secretary of State. And all, don't get me wrong, I do like that show, but there are some episodes that, again, it's pedantic, you know. You're excited because, you know, they figured out some political maneuver to make somebody come to the negotiation table. You know, it's not Star Trek. And to that sense, you know, how successful would a Star Trek show be if it were like that? But then, based upon, you know, what they released at Comic-Con, the trailer and stuff, Sean, what was your term?
I have a huge chubby right now.
You know, I'm very interested in watching the show. Now, there are a lot of questions about it.
But that's usually the sign of a good show.
Yes.
I mean, we were talking about Discovery and asking all kinds of questions for at least a year.
2 years.
Two or three. Because,
I mean, it was announced in 2016. It was supposed to come out in 2017, and we got the first season in... Or, no, it was announced in 2015. They started filming in 16, and we got the first season in 17.
And so, I swore that show was never going to make it.
Or no.
I mean, I never
go back to my original timeline. Sorry.
I never thought we would actually see it. So now that we've seen it, the same kind of buzz is around Picard.
Yeah.
Without all the turmoil.
Well, I think
which is both good and bad.
It is both good and bad. I think fans were ready to, because again, before the Viacom CBS split, we had a rich story of movies that went directly into the show, and that's, you know, Picard itself might be instrumental in
it is
in that bringing it together, because it's supposed to be the events after Nemesis.
So if they can undo Nemesis, then I'm all in.
Yeah,
I'll pay double if they can undo Nemesis.
You know, and the other thing is it.
So that's worth $13 a month.
Exactly right. To me, it's worth $13 a month.
So, but you know, people are comfortable with Picard. He, but for most people, I mean, we're true Trekkers, Trekkies, whatever you want to call us. So you know, TOS and the reruns of TOS, because we never saw it. None of us saw it when it originally aired. Those, but growing up watching those.
Oh wow.
And the motion pictures at the time, that's what brought us to being big Trek fans. And then in 87, we get the Trek reboot. Still the Enterprise, but a new crew. First couple seasons, we're kind of going, I don't know if this is going to make it. And then third season hits, and it, you know, and from there on, it turned out to be phenomenal.
Yeah, but they grabbed, and they actually mentioned this in that panel, the 40th anniversary, this will get on your island here, when pocketbooks started writing.
Yes.
That's when it kind of...
Well, he and I used to trade pocketbooks all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Have you read this one? Have you read that one? Right. And, you know, and the pocketbooks was smart, because they got the original writers of the show, DC Fontana, and, you know,
and
all them were writing the books.
And they were standalone.
Yeah.
But they were great. They weren't, like, BS stories.
Yeah. But the... you also had the logs, too, which came before that. That's what drove the pocketbooks, where they had taken the cartoon, when the cartoon was out in 76 and it had ended, and for about 3 or 4 years they had collected they had serialized the stories in the cartoons into...
They did that with the original TOS episodes too.
Yeah, they did. But those weren't called the logs, I don't think.
I'm pretty sure they were.
Were they?
But you know, the other point that you know, talking about watching Trek in a batch, one of the things that when I finally bought my complete set DVDs of TOS, I went through and watched them all, and there were episodes that I was like, if I ever saw this episode before, I don't really remember it much. Mm-hmm. And that's because when we were watching Trek, it was usually one of the Saturday matinee, you know, marathon deals on the local Fox affiliate. So we only really saw 12 of the 69 episodes.
Yeah, yeah, the most popular ones.
Which, granted, were the best episodes, but my point is that, you know, again, this is another one of those things that, you know, if you want to watch it in a batch or watch it, period, we didn't really get a chance to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, going back to the Picard trailer, one of the things I think they're going to do, and if you read between the lines, I think this is smart, Picard cannot, based upon a lot of things, and I'm going to throw age out there as the one thing, cannot sign up for like a 3-year deal, right? Did you notice they're bringing in a major character? The trailer was all about Picard, but this young lady will be the character that's going to drive the series, and they're going to make that switch. I think they did very, very smart by how they set that trailer.
The other thing is, so I think they're setting up the show as well, as because you have Picard, they're going to have flashbacks to Brent Spiner as Data, but it's actually new footage, so the potential for Data to be in the show. They've already said that Tryker, that's their joint name, Troy and Riker will be back. reprising their characters in the show. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the first season, they're series regulars, you know, reoccurring characters. But as they go forward, you know, they slowly kind of bring that out and they bring new characters in. Now, and the other thing is so that's interesting if by watching the, and I've read as much as that's available and watching, I've watched the trailer multiple times, is we're kind of delving into the fan fiction of the whole Star Trek Renegades thing. We have people in the Star Trek universe, but they're not the Maquis, and they're not Starfleet, and they're not Romulan and everything else. You know, but they're moving forward stories and they're heroes to the Federation because they're doing these things, or heroes to more than the Federation in this, in some of the instances. And then we have to bring back the Borg too.
That was the biggest surprise. We had not heard even a whisper that this was going to be a Borg show.
Yeah.
Which to me is that brings up all kinds of craziness, because what we'd heard was this was going to be a show that dealt with the aftermath of two things. Both were Romulan centered.
Yep.
You had the Nemesis thing with Data, and you had the
Kelvin timeline.
The Kelvin timeline thing with
Nero,
Spock and Nero and blowing up Romulus and all that goodies. So the whole point behind Picard getting out was he had led some rescue mission, and we can only assume that that's the aftermath of the Spock Nero thing. And so that's where we get the whole idea this was going to be a procedural show
versus an
action show.
If you watch the trailer too, there's one definite Romulan character in the trailer, possibly two. He could be Vulcan, but he didn't. The way he talked, he didn't act like, you know, what we expect Vulcans in canon to talk like.
Right. I am far more interested in this show after the first trailer than I was before.
Oh, me too. Me too, absolutely.
Initially,
because
I was jazzed about, you know, hey, well, what happened to our dude? You know, I mean, he's not James T. Kirk, but he's the captain, you know, and the way we kind of left that crew after Nemesis was a bummer.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it was a bummer. I mean, yay for Riker and Troy. They get married and they get to go off on their merry little adventure. But what about the rest of them?
Yeah.
You know, I mean. And
where the poop is Worf? Did she just throw Worf to the curb? That kind of sucks.
Yeah, who knows? So, one last item before we wrap this up. Tarantino Trek.
No.
No.
Notice there's no in Tarantino's name. And it should be a hell no. Tarantino hell no.
Unless it's on Orion, then I'm all for it. You give me some Orion slave girls in a Tarantino movie, and dude, I am in the front row. Yeah.
Now we're back to the 12 to 18 male demographic. And I have...
And that's my mentality.
Close to zero interest in watching that. And I think actually it will damage the brand.
Oh, I do too.
And I can't imagine why we're even still talking about it.
Yeah, the Federation pulp fiction movie. I don't know that anybody is really into. Be into it, because frankly, I mean, as great as pulp fiction was at the time as a cultural piece. It's not something I go back and it's not on my top 10 movies list that I'll watch over and over again. And the things that are memorable about that movie are not the things that Tarantino wants to do. I mean, it's just like, I love the movie The Hateful Eight, except for the scene where Kurt Russell destroys that Martin guitar. Even it is not, you know, none of his movies, Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight. The ones that I think are his best work, Kill Bill I didn't think was a great movie. As a matter of fact, first time I watched it, I fell asleep because, I mean, you can only watch her chop somebody up with a sword so many times. I just don't think that plays well in Star Trek.
Now me, I can watch her all day long, Ginsu people.
Yeah.
Uma. Love me some Uma.
But I think the thing is we've already lived through JJ massacring what Star Trek is.
Yeah.
And now we're going to do it again with Quentin Tarantino.
See, I think we'll definitively know if and when the CBS Viacom merger happens. And I think once that happens, that whole idea will be squashed because the whole Kelvin timeline will just be put to rest.
Well, and I mean, that's the most infuriating thing. I've seen an article that quotes Quentin Tarantino as saying that he thinks the Chris Pine Kirk is the William Shatner Kirk, and that whole universe is just he has no idea what he's talking about.
I read the same article and he goes, yeah, JJ tried to explain it to me. I didn't get it. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
And that,
yeah,
that tells me all I need to know. And if I'm the powers that be at both Paramount and or CBS, I'm like, this guy doesn't get it.
Yeah. Yep.
If JJ can't explain it to him.
Yeah.
Of all people. And dude either gets it or doesn't. There's a problem.
Yeah, it's not hard. You just need a whiteboard and a couple of markers, and you should be able to explain what went on.
It ain't rocket science. It's not brain surgery.
Yep. So, well, we want to hear from you, our listeners. Please send us some feedback at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we will see you on the digital flip side.